Hi, my name's Samantha. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm here today to share my experience, strength and hope with you. I came into OA in October 2013. I had been on annual leave and things didn't go my way. It was my birthday and everyone that I'd asked to come out to have lunch with me wasn't available. So I stayed at home and I didn't know then, but it was my last and final binge. I had been buying in chocolates for Christmas. And I went through into the spare room and brought through one tin of sweets. I started on the one tin of sweets and after that I didn't feel that was enough. So I went through and got the second tin and I continued eating them while sitting in my self-pity mode. And before the end of the day was out, I'd eaten three tins of the big chocolates, a huge box of chocolates and a box of biscuits. Afterwards, I just felt I'd hit the effort switch, so I went into the kitchen and started on the food in the cupboards. I just behaved like a locust. That night, I really hit the guilt and shame, and I just felt I had had enough. I'd reached rock bottom, and I decided that I was just going to take my own life. Because in my head, I couldn't be helped. I had phoned a family member to take my pets because I thought it would make it easier if they weren't in the house. And they said they couldn't help me out, and I was absolutely furious with that. I didn't have the courage to go through with it because, for me, I couldn't stand the sight of pain or the sight of blood. So I decided to give up that idea. So my last resort that night was, before I went to bed, was I was going to pray to God that just to take me in my sleep, that I'd had enough. And I prayed so hard. I was so sincere about it, I just wanted God to take me in my sleep. Well, you can imagine how furious I was in the morning when I woke up and I was still here. I was absolutely furious. I was swearing and the air was blue. I finally went back to work, and as I got into work, the usual, people ask, how was your annual leave? And I told a close friend that I'd had enough. I just didn't want to be here anymore. And she thought I was looking for another job. And I said, no, I just don't want to be alive, I says. And I don't have the strength to take my own life, but I would gladly pay somebody to do it for me. And needless to say that she had obviously seen there was something seriously wrong, and she went and spoke to my boss. Later on that day, my boss phoned my department and she asked me to come into her office. I went into her office and the alarm bells was ringing straight away because there was the tea tray with the tea, coffee, sugar and biscuits set up, which never had been done before. She says, do you come in, have a seat, and she locked the door behind me. Now I thought, that's it, I've been found out. They're phoning somebody to come and take me away, or they're going to tell me to pack my things up and leave. She asked me how I was and I said, I'm fine, because that's what I thought she wanted to hear. And she says, no, she says, I want to know how you really are. One of the girls said they had concerns for you. And that was it for me. It was just like a volcano. I just erupted and I burst into tears. And for me, crying in front of people was a big issue because I was always brought up to cry about things, that it was a sign of weakness. But I had enough by this point. I'd reached melting point and I couldn't take it anymore. It just felt like a pressure cooker. And she sat and listened to what I had to say, and my boss said to me, have you ever heard of a programme called Overeaters Anonymous? And I said, no. She says, well, I know someone that's been in and that's really been successful for them. Would you like to go and try it out? And I said, no. Because in my head, nothing could be sorted. Nothing in this world was just going to be able to fix the pain that I was in. And she says to me, well, why don't you go for me? And because I've been such a people pleaser all my life, I thought, you know what? I'll just go and try it, and then I can come back and tell her, you know what, that wasn't for me. And when my boss was sitting talking to me, she said, you know what, Samantha, you're here for a purpose. It's not your time to leave this planet yet. She says, so why don't you go to OA and see what you think about it and come back and tell me how you got on? I called a group member. Once I googled the telephone number, and she had said to me that to read the doctor's opinion because she felt that had helped her. And in the doctor's opinion, it said, these allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. Once having formed a habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, the problems pile up in them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Now that's where my life was at before I came, and I couldn't believe that I had a connection with what was written in this book, and it was the first time it had ever been explained to me as an allergy. I went along to my first meeting. I had 4 days to wait till I got to that meeting that day, and I don't know how I got there. Now looking back on it, my higher power must have been working with me even then at the very beginning. During my first meeting, I think I cried most of it. I don't really remember a lot of it, but what sticks in my head clearly is on the invitation to you at the very end when it says, "Welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, welcome home." And for me, that was the only place I ever felt I could be myself. I could take that cloak of secrecy off and leave it at the door and come into the rooms of OA and not be judged by how I look, my weight was, what colour my hair was, how tall or how short I was. None of that mattered. We were all here for the same purpose. And I just felt accepted. And I knew on day one that this was the place for me. And for me, being in this programme, I'm looking for inner peace and outer peace as well. And there's a bit in the book where it says, if you will honestly face the truth about yourself and the illness. Once I had written my moral inventory, when I was working on the steps, that's when I discovered how much my compulsive overeating had been a big grip of my life. Because from the age of 5 years old, I used to come in from school every day and I used to look in the rubbish bin for sweetie papers. And I expected what was in that bin to be the same amount of sweets in the fridge, and woe betide if it wasn't there. I used to kick off and have a temper tantrum because I expected the same food that people had eaten in the house when I was at school would be there for me. And even when it came to Christmas time, I gave my teacher a box of chocolates, and I must have been only about 5 or 6 at the time, and I said to her, on one condition. She says, "What's that, Samantha?" And I says, "Half each." And she was like, "No, you can't give people a present and then expect to take it back." And I said, "But that's what always happens in the house." She says, no, you can't do that." Well, that was me. I was absolutely furious. And I just wouldn't speak to her for days. I was so angry that she wouldn't give me half each of these chocolates. And I remember another incident when everybody was out working and it was Christmas time. And I was sitting eating a tin of roses, watching the Christmas movies, and as you do, you're sitting eating away and watching the films. This panic came over me and I realised I'd got to the silver bottom of the tin, and just fear grew instant because I knew I would be found out at how much I'd eaten. In my head, my solution to that was, you got money for your Christmas, run round to the local store, buy a box of roses and top the tin up, nobody would be none the wiser. Well, that night after dinner, my mother said to me, "Give me that tin over and I'll have a wee chocolate out of it." And I gave her it over, and inside I was all proud of myself that I thought I'd got away with it. And then she started shouting, "Where did these particular sweets come from?" And I said, "They've always been there." And she was like, "No, they haven't been, because last night I sat and took out all those favourites of mine and there was none left in the tin, and all of a sudden, suddenly more has appeared." Well, that was an absolute war in the house that night. And I think that was one of the reasons I realised how badly my food plan was. Because even from the age of 16, I had tried between 6 and 7 different weight loss programmes, thinking the next one would be the quick fix that I was looking for. My weight fluctuated because I used food for every emotion, whether I was happy, sad, angry. And even living at home with my mother, who was obviously a feeder, at the time, she used food as a peace offering, because even if I was younger and she would hit you, or if she would scream at you, and maybe she would hit you too hard the day before, and obviously she'd a pang of guilt. And I'd come home from school and she'd make me my favourite dinner, or my favourite dessert, and I used to want to tell her where to shove that dessert, but I always wanted to think, maybe she doesn't mean it today, maybe she won't do it again. Do you know what, I'll just eat that dinner, because she did put a lot of work into it. And even when I was younger, I had a pet rabbit, and my pet rabbit died. Came home from school, and my mum says to me, "I've got good news and bad news." And I thought, well, do you know what? I'll take the bad news, and then I've got the good news. to make up for it. So I said, what's the bad news? She says, oh, your rabbit died today. And of course, I was really, really upset about it. And I said, so what's the good news? She says, there's a box of milk tray. And she obviously thought that was the solution to make me feel better. And it's not until I come into program today and I'm no longer in the food that I realise that no amount of food is going to solve the pain that you're in when you lose something precious to you. And even when I had my own house, I used to buy cakes in for visitors, just in case a visitor came to the door. I knew fine well I wasn't getting visitors that day, but that was my excuse to tell the woman behind the counter in the baker's, because I thought she could see through me and what I was doing with these cakes. So I used to stand and make up these fairy tale stories to justify the amount of cakes that I used to buy in the baker's. Coming into programme, I got my sponsor and we worked on a food plan that would maybe suit me best. And I realised from the beginning that sugar was my addiction. For me, a calorie count and have 3 meals a day, because I can't do intuitive eating. Because all my life I would cheat my way through things, because even when I made meals at home, it was either, do you eat that or do you climb it? It was so big, couldn't get any more food piled onto the plate. And 9 times out of 10, you couldn't see the pattern in the plate. And I used to eat until I was at bursting to capacity. And it took me a long time to realise you can actually eat a meal without being bursting to capacity. But I was always looking for that sensation, because then that's when I knew I'd reached my limit. And enough was enough. For me today, I have to think of one day at a time, because my head would go crazy for the fact that I couldn't have sugar again. And I've also had to learn to eat, cook meals from scratch instead of buying ready meals, because in my old ways, I would eat my main meal as fast as I could, because then that was my green light to have a binge after dinner. And a lot of times I used to think, well, what's the point in cooking for one? I'll just quickly buy a ready meal, not realising that there isn't that much nutrition in it. And for me, coming into the rooms, listening to other fellow stories keeps me abstinent. And reading the big book and realising that I'm not alone, there is a solution. And also having my sponsor's been amazing. She saved me from my mad head many a day. And even when I've listened to my own doubts in my head, because I have too many high expectations of things, I need to pray for serenity and hope. And I've learned so much coming into fellowship, because I came through those doors with the mentality of a 10-year-old, still that little child being dictated to. And it's now I've come through the doors and I've grown up and I've learned to deal with my addiction, and I've learned to deal with it on life's terms, and also about facing the truth about this disease and dealing with the madness in my head and taking control back by working the steps, learning to hand it over to my higher power. But every time I say the word turnover, I always think about cake, so I'm learning to deal with that one. A lot of times I have a problem with my self-image, because for years and years and years, I couldn't look people in the eye in the street, because I always felt my heart was transparent and they could see through what I had eaten. So it was easier just to look at the ground, and then nobody could actually see the real person. And my sponsor suggested saying 3 positives every day in the mirror when I got up in the morning. And I was like, no way. Have you seen this face in the morning? It ain't a pretty sight. And she says, do you know what? I don't care how long it takes you to do it. You stand in the mirror and you say 3 positives every day. And I was like, what's the point to that? She says, because if you see it often enough, you'll start believing in it. And for today, I can walk down the street and hold my head up high and be proud of who I am. And it has taken a long time. And sometimes I have to maybe do it 2 or 3 times a day to convince myself that if you say it often enough, you'll start believing in it. A big part of the programme is reaching out to others. Sometimes I find that difficult, because I feel maybe I'm being a nuisance. I'll maybe just call back later. And sometimes later never comes. But if I reach out at that given moment when I'm maybe having food thoughts or I'm thinking about turning to the food, that's when it's best to do it, rather than wait until you've eaten the food and then it's too late. You can't change how things have been. And also, what made me laugh is someone said to me one time, you know, you're not that special or unique. There's many other people in the same position as yourself. And that made me laugh because it got me out of my own pity party for one. Because I thought, you know what, you're not that special, Samantha. There's other people out there and they need just as much help, and that's where we have to reach out to one another. So I just hope today that you can take something away from what I've said. Thank you.